Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that's him. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
Hey, Souther. How you doing? How long has it been since you got hit by that car?
Yesterday was 1 month.
Ah.
So 1 month and one day.
Cool, man. How
sucks.
You feeling?
It sucks. My arm is still broken. Surgery has been ruled out. I don't have to have surgery. I just have to keep wearing this sling for another couple weeks, and then we're going to do what the doctor called aggressive physical therapy. And when I said, what's aggressive mean? He just looked at me and said, painful. Painful physical therapy is coming my way.
Oh, man.
In fact, after the show, I've got to make a few phone calls and set up my first appointment.
Oh, geez. Well, at least you're, you know, in the clear as far as surgery goes. So that's good.
I took the week off. I went down to North Carolina to my buddy's farm. It's called Mountain Chase. It's his family farm. It's beautiful.
What happens down there?
Kind of nothing. It's gorgeous. You know, just 88 acres of beautiful pasture land and a little bit of forest, and we just wandered around and drank a lot of delicious, very inexpensive whiskey.
I can imagine. Wait, what, did you pick up anything or bring anything back?
I brought back two 1.75 liter bottles. I brought back a ancient age 10-year expression that was $19.
Oh my god.
And the Heaven Hill white label 6-year bottled in bond, which was $14.50.
That's great, man.
Yeah, unbelievable. A great week of relaxing and whiskey drinking.
Nice, man. Well, I'm going with you next time.
Hell yeah, you are. You're totally invited. There's work that needs to be done down there, and I couldn't do a lot of it with a broken arm.
It's a farm. I can do it.
I know, right? You're definitely more cut out for it than me.
Cool, man. Why don't you introduce our guest today?
Why not? In the studio today, we've got Adrian Stillman, who her most recent project is a book called Where Bartenders Drink. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks, guys.
The studio is where we drink. Great to have you here. Yes. You haven't been on the show before, have you?
No, I haven't been on the show.
I can't believe
that.
We've known each other for a very long time. Well, you moved away. You've been living in California for the last 4 years or so, right?
Yeah. So I moved to Napa Valley in 2013.
Why'd you do that?
Well, I met a boy.
Oh,
and that's where he lived. So...
Well,
he said, hey, come live in wine country. And I said, okay.
Well, you took good advantage of that. What have you been doing in wine country?
I did.
Besides getting married.
So when I moved out, I spent a year at the Culinary Institute, the same one that has a campus in Hyde Park. Upstate New York has a campus in St. Helena, Napa Valley. Mm-hmm. And out there, they have a wine and beverage program. So
what's it called out there? Like Stonehenge or something?
It's Greystone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stonehenge.
I had to think about that for a second. Kind of like that. Actually, it's a really cool building. It's one of the earliest buildings in the Napa Valley, and it was originally built as a co-op for local grape growers to come bring their grapes and make wine. And before electricity and pumps, you had to bring the grapes up to like the top floor and then feed them by gravity down into the barrels. And so there's all kinds of great photographs of these contraptions and men walking around on like scaffolding outside to get the grapes in at the top so that they could fall down and break and ferment in the barrels.
No amount of work seems too great in an effort to make alcohol. If we've learned anything from the human condition, nothing stops us from building contraptions that will make us alcohol.
Yeah, that's true.
Yep. And a lot of blood, sweat, and tears.
So what were you doing at the Culinary Institute?
So I spent a year doing there studying wine, mostly wine. There was a sort of a there was a it was wine technically wine and beverage, but most of it was wine. Mm-hmm. And I at the end of that I took the Court of Master Sommeliers certified sommelier exam. So it was a pretty intense.
That's not an easy test.
No,
so
it's
I've
not.
Heard.
It's hard. It was great. It was really awesome to be just immersed in wine and spend a concentrated time learning about it. Otherwise, you know, you kind of, it's here and there. It's, oh, I go to a restaurant and I tried this cool wine, or I read this article, and but it's really hard to hit that critical mass where you can then really have a core understanding of the whole ecosystem and all the different regions of the world. And certainly there's, I have a solid foundation, but wine is something that you can study for your whole life and not, you know, still kind of not know many, many things. So it's a lifelong pursuit. But that was just a fascinating experience. And then after I did that program, I started working with a company we make software for wineries, basically, to allow them to sell wine directly to consumers. So instead of a winery selling to a distributor who sells to a retailer or a restaurant who sells to you, buying the wine directly from the winery.
Right, which is great for everybody. I think that sounds like it's great for the maker.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably getting a greater profit dollar, but also for the consumer if you feel more connected to the winery.
Absolutely. I mean, you really get that that inside track to where are the grapes being grown? How are they being grown? What's happening in the winery? And in the same way that people have become really interested in knowing where their steak came from, now they're also becoming interested in where their Cabernet Sauvignon came from. And I think that's really great it's great for people. I think it's great for the farmers who are making the wine. And in many cases, it's small. You know, it's like one guy with his couple acres of land. And that's a reason that I love the internet, because it allows somebody like that to make their product available to a wide group of people relatively easily and cheaply in a way that definitely couldn't have happened, in the past. And I think it's great for the, like on a more macro level, it's great for the environment, because when people have, as we are more focused on organic and like demanding that the people who supply us with food practice sustainability and good, you know, good practices, the more directly connected you are with that person, the more you can make that demand and seek out products that meet your, or that are in keeping with that and support people who are on, you know, making that their mission.
Right. Absolutely. I don't know if I missed this or what, but is it exclusive to California, or have you branched out?
The company that I work for? Yeah, actually international.
You are?
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah, it's called Wine Direct, and we operate in California, in the U.S., all over the U.S. We have clients in, like, Kentucky, Florida, Ohio, Arkansas, all these places. You did not know they made wine there. They make wine, and they sell it on the internet, and it's awesome. Canada, Australia, and New Zealand.
Amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Say it again, WineNet?
Wine Direct.
Wine Direct, sorry. Yep.
Wine Direct.
I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Man.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
you were led west by a young man.
I was.
But then you dove into wine because you already had an interest in drinking.
Cocktails.
Yes.
That's right. That's how we met.
That is how we met. You were doing a project here in New York. Do you want to talk about that?
I will.
You don't have to. You seem hesitant.
No, I'm just waiting for you to give me the setup, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So.
What got you into drinking? There's the setup.
Well, so in 2012, I had been working in finance for a number of years, and I decided I didn't want to do that with the rest of my life. And I basically made a list of the things that I was interested in doing. And it was like cocktails, food, travel, shoes. And I'm like,
so basically you made a list that said, what I'm interested in is vacation.
Yeah, basically. And I'm like, how am I going to make a career out of any of these things? This is not a good start. So that kind of brought me into the food and beverage world more broadly. And I just began to explore, how could I have a career in this space that I find so exciting? What I ended up doing is with a college friend of mine, Alexa Scordato, we started a website called Dipsology, Dipsology, and that name is from dipsa, which is the ancient Greek for thirst, and dipsomania was a medical term used in the 1800s for someone with an incurable thirst for alcohol. So, dipsology.
There's a picture of Souther Teague.
That's right. In the dictionary entry, it's just our names.
This guy.
That's right. So we started that. It was a guide to great cocktail bars in New York City. And we did a bunch of great cocktail events. And that is, in a way, that was kind of the prototype for Where Bartenders Drink, my book, which is ostensibly why I'm here today.
Yeah, of course.
And kind of the sort of jumping off point to working on that project.
Yeah. Cool. And is it active? Dipsology?
It's kind of on hold.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I flipped over there to it today just to see what was going on. And
yeah.
It looked like it hadn't been touched in a while, but down at the bottom there was a link for your book. So I was like, well, she's still using it, whether it's active or not.
That's right. Yeah. It's kind of, has gathered some cobwebs. The book is definitely a more up-to-date reference.
Sure.
At this point. So.
And broader, right? Dipsology was pretty stuck to New York.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
It was only in New York.
Yeah.
And we, had ambitions to expand it, but it was very much focused on New York only, and the book is global.
Yeah.
So it's 750, that's correct.
Worldwide.
Yep. 750 bars, 60 countries, 6 continents.
Cool.
And as recommended by 225 bartenders, including Souther.
I'm one of them, that's right.
That's right. So we'll get Damon in the second edition.
Cool.
But his bar's in there.
So. But his bar is in there. Grand Army is in the book.
That's, no one wants to listen to me about where to go to drink. As long as someone else is telling other people to go drink at my bar, then that's the real win right there.
That's right.
Exactly. That's a W. What are you doing in town right now? I didn't ask that before.
Well,
are you doing anything? Are you just visiting your family?
I'm mostly visiting, yeah. So my best friend got married last weekend in Greenwich.
Congratulations.
Oh, I thought you married your best friend.
My other best friend.
Okay. Second best.
So my husband and I are in town for the week, hanging out.
Cool.
It's not work at all. People. But I remember when you were here. When was that? Was that January or February? It was cold out. It was March
when we did the event at Rizzoli.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it was March.
Yeah, we did your book touring, I guess, to some degree, and there was a bookstore here in New York, and you got myself and the Fords and
Megan Dorman.
Oh, and Megan Dorman also up on stage.
Yep,
talked about the book. And it sold out at that event, if I remember right.
It did. Yeah, they sold out of all their copies.
It was a packed house.
It was. It was a great, great evening.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
So, and then I think we kind of tentatively set this date at that time.
That's
right?
Correct.
I just thought you were in town for business or something.
I'm in town for this.
Oh, right on. Yeah, oh.
For the radio show.
Yeah, that's important stuff. That's important work we're doing.
That's right.
So, so you had the book, the website Dipsology, which led to the book, Where Bartenders Drink.
Yeah.
The Last Word on the Glass. It's out on Faden Publishing, right? I just need to know, I kind of have an idea of what your process was with this. I mean, you already had practiced by going around New York, but, how did you... What was the vetting process for who you were? Who were the bartenders that you were asking?
Yeah, I have a follow-up question to that. What was the vetting process, and then how did you get everybody's email?
Well, the answer to both questions is sort of Facebook. So, as you both know, the bartending community is very active on Facebook, and so I used it heavily to find the right people. And in for New York and for much of the U.S., I knew you, for example, and so I sent you an email. One of the things I was really focused on was making sure that this book could very easily have been a book about New York, London, L.A., San Francisco, Tokyo, that's it.
Sure, right.
You could write a book about 750 bars in New York City.
Right. Yeah.
We didn't want to do that.
It's just one neighborhood.
Yeah, right?
Right. These days, yeah. So it was really important to me that we include a broad geographical, sampling of people and places. And so I spent a lot of time trying to identify who to talk to in Latvia and Lithuania and Romania, Belarus, And so I, for that, I used a lot of, I would look up like who had won the Diageo World Class because they do it by country.
Oh, right.
And like almost every country has at least an entrant. And so I would Google that person and like internet stalk them and send them a Facebook message. And that's actually one of the things.
So a lot of this book was like detective work.
Oh yeah. 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 I spent hours and hours and hours on Facebook sending out messages to people I'd never met, asking them if they would like to contribute to this book. And what was really exciting is that the overwhelming positive response from these hundreds of people who I have never met, who were like really excited to get back to me and gave me their email and responded to the, you know, when I got the survey out, responded and had telephone conversations with me to tell me about, you know, what's going on in Atlanta and what's going on in Hong Kong and all these, you know, far-flung markets that I don't haven't necessarily had the pleasure of being able to travel to myself. So really writing the book was also like a vicarious vacation. Cool. And yeah,
it was, it's very cool.
Yeah,
it was really cool. And I'm really proud that there are so many countries represented in the book. And I wanted to get all 50 states. We didn't get all 50 states.
Who's missing?
North Carolina.
What? I was just there.
Well, look.
Some great bars down there.
Well, you know, this is, as we were saying before the show, the nature of printing anything is that it's out of date, like, as soon as it's in your hand, no matter how, you know, no matter how vigilant you are about updating it. So I have said it a number of times, you know, since the book came out. Oh, second edition. We'll have to include that one. But it's, you know, it's true. So I did try to get North Carolina, and I was, sort of came up with nothing. There's Charleston's in the book.
North Carolina, we're coming for you.
That's right. We're missing Vermont and New Hampshire.
Wow.
Rhode Island.
Guys, send in your submissions.
Seriously.
Dakotas, Montana.
I get Montana's a little sparse.
A little sparse. I don't know if we have Idaho, but we do have, because that's sort of not as interesting. We don't have what we do have.
Yeah.
Is
Oklahoma.
We've got Oklahoma.
Yeah, we made it.
We've got Oklahoma. We've got Ohio, Alabama, a bunch of places in Pittsburgh. So we got Philadelphia. We also got a bunch in Pittsburgh. Arizona.
It's awesome. I mean,
yeah,
it's covering Kentucky. As much as it can cover. And yeah. I think the first edition, as you mentioned, will spark that interest from people, and they'll be like, "Wait a minute, you didn't make the book. Let's make our voice heard.
Let's open a bar."
So you'll probably
let's open a bar so you can be in the book. It's perfect.
You want to create an email? We'll blast it out on the radio, and people start emailing you. All right, this second. You think about it. And while you're thinking about it, we should probably take a break and hear from our sponsor.
That's true. Well, let's be quick, because I want to hear more about this book.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, back in a moment.
Heritage Foods USA is a farm-to-table online butcher and founding sponsor of Heritage Radio Network.
Heritage Foods got its start when Patrick Martin's first stepped foot onto Frank Reese's Kansas farm in 2001. Back then, Frank was the only farmer in America raising true heritage turkeys with recorded lineages tracing back more than 150 years.
Patrick knew instantly he'd found a unique moment, an opportunity to go beyond acknowledging these breeds as being jeopardized and to actually do something to save them. Patrick asked Frank to ramp up production and made a promise to him that if he would raise them, Heritage Foods USA would sell them.
That was the moment that Heritage Foods' slogan, "Eat them to save them," was born. By creating a market for delicious meats from heritage breeds, we can ensure they'll be around for generations to come.
Plus, heritage breeds just taste a whole lot better. Learn more at heritagefoodsusa.com and use the code HERITAGERADIO for 2 free pork chops with your first order, brother.
Hey. Like what you hear? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. With fresh programming every week, we've got something for everyone. Trying to start your own food business? Concerned about where your food comes from? Looking for the best wine or beer to bring to a party? Find our shows on iTunes or Stitcher, or head to heritageradionetwork.org to listen live and subscribe to our newsletter.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. And we have our buddy, author Adrian Stillman, in the studio today. We've just been talking about her book, where bartenders drink. And yeah, Oklahoma made the cut.
Sweet. Nice.
Oklahoma. Here, let me look them up real quick.
All right.
I can tell you.
What do you think, Dan? So we have the... Tell me what you think is going to be there.
Ludovine?
Ludovine. Hell yeah.
R&J Cocktail Supper Club? Whatever.
I have the High-Low Club.
The High-Low Club, of course. Yeah.
Of course.
Which I really love the... Drinks. This was recommended... Do you know Jeffrey Cole?
I think I do.
Okay, so he's the one who recommended this bar, and he said... They say that if Freddie Mercury, Mae West, and Che Guevara had a love child, she and her girlfriend would come here.
Nice.
Yeah. So that doesn't awesome. Want to make you get on a plane to Oklahoma City. I don't know what will.
So you just kind of read a recommendation from the book. So that, I don't think we, you know, it's not a visual media radio. So explain how the book works to the listener.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
'cause I remember getting an email from you and you... And went from there. So how'd it go? Mm-hmm.
So when I solicited these recommendations, I emailed these 200 and change bartenders all over the world and asked a series of questions. And I asked for their for bar recommendations for bars in a couple of categories. I wanted a late night bar, a hotel bar, a neighborhood bar, a local must visit, as in, like, if you come to Oklahoma City, do not leave town without visiting X. A bar that's worth the travel.
That's a good one.
And the bar that you wish you'd opened.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a really fun category. I mean, they were all fun, but particularly wish I'd opened, because we got a lot of really interesting, backstories about why people wish they'd opened that bar. Tony Abuganim said he wished he'd opened Employees Only. which was a fun, fun conversation to have. So those were the categories.
Cool.
And then in terms of how the bar is then, or the book rather, is then organized, is it's organized by geography. So it's bar listings. Each kind of entry is the name of the bar, the location, phone number, website, some basic stuff. When is it open? And then there are quotes from the people who recommended the bar about why they recommended it, what they love about it.
Did you have any? I don't have my copy with me, and I can't remember. Was there any ranking? Isn't the right word, but was there any like hash marks for how many people recommended this particular bar? Like, say, did 25 people recommend the High Low?
Yeah, they aren't included in the book, so like I know that.
But you have that.
But they're not actually in here. So
second edition.
Well, what was one thing that was really, I think the, so this, Where Bartenders Drink is part of a series that began with Where Chefs Eat, mm-hmm. which some people may be familiar with. I did not have anything to do with that book, which is a question I get a lot. So just to head that off at the pass. it was the same concept. It's they asked chefs where they eat. And in that book, they did list out all the names. And I think maybe space, they decided cut that for this one. It's a tome.
It's a brick of a book.
It's already
yeah,
like really large. Is. Yeah. And Where Chefs Eat is like twice the size. Is there
ever going to be like a Where Bartenders Eat and Where Chefs Drink?
Right.
Right. I feel like that is
the mashup.
Really good. Well, because there's, chefs have the down low on like good places to drink, and the same thing with bartenders. So
course,
I feel like there's a total opportunity there.
I feel like I talk to bartenders more about like other than on the show, more about like last place you ate and like what do you like cooking right now? I feel like chefs just like they always want a beer, man. they want something to drink.
Yeah.
So it could be an interesting crossover.
I love that idea.
Let's do it. We'll write it together.
Man. Done. Yeah.
All right, great.
But I will say that what's interesting is, so there were a few bars that were recommended by a lot of people. And they're kind of, like the American Bar at the Savoy.
I think I recommended that
one. I think you did.
In my Worth the Travel.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Bar High Five in Tokyo. I think Attaboy is in that. Employees Only. In the New York location, which is the only one that was open when I was researching the book. So there's a few kind of those like highlights. Oh, the Nomad and PDT. So those got a lot of recommendations. But I think the most number of recommendations of any bar was maybe like 25, which is, you know, okay, that's 10% of the 225 bartenders who contributed. But once you got out of that top like 5, maybe 10, where you had kind of over 10 people had recommended each one, you really, really quickly got into one person recommending each bar, which I think is cool because it speaks to the diversity of the bars in the book. And it would be really easy for, you know, it's relatively easy to find out about the most popular cocktail bars all over the world and, like, in the biggest markets. And I, although those are included in the book and it's important for them to be here, to me, that's not really the most interesting thing about the book because you can, they're all over the internet. You know, you don't need to buy this book to know that the Nomad is a great bar.
Right.
Or that, you know, PDT, has a long wait. You know, it's like not that useful. Exactly. But the, you know, like just to, I have the page open to Brooklyn, to the page with Grand Army, Damon's Bar. But
yeah.
One of the other ones on here is a place called Buttermilk on Fifth Avenue in Brooklyn, recommended by Theo Lieberman, and he says it's a local neighborhood dive. You can bring your own potato chips, and they have Miller High Life and Fernet.
Yep.
You are never going to find that.
And I love Theo Lieberman. I'll take that recommendation in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But so yeah, you're right. You'll never get that recommendation on, like, you know, Yelp or whatever.
Top 38 bars to drink at right now.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No. It's never going to be on there. No. So I think that's the what's fun about this book and what's really valuable about it.
Yeah, plus just that, that even that little blurb, you know, granted I happen to know Theo Lieberman, but I think even if I was reading that and not knowing him, that statement means a lot. That says a lot about the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Probably says a pretty fair deal about the recommender as well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah, that's. I was going to say that it's
and each recommender. What do you call them? Is that a right word?
Contributor.
Thank you. Each contributor has a little blurb about themselves, right? So it surely says in there that Theo was a part of Milk and Honey or whatever, right? An EMP,
like, right?
You suddenly go, oh, this guy's got credentials, and he says these things about things I love: Miller High Life and Fernet Branca and potato chips.
It's also an interesting way just to get to know some of the people you read about all the time.
Sure. Yeah, you're getting some insight on the bartender themselves.
And especially for,
it's a great place.
I think also for the new bartender, it's like, you know, like it's fun for, you know, consumers and people who don't work in the industry to like get the inside scoop on, you know, where to go and what to do.
Oh, of course.
From the bartender. And we're always getting asked customers.
Yeah, look behind the curtain. That's what everybody wants.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think it's especially important for like new bartenders because then they can be like, all right, it's not about me wearing a vest and tie all the time. I can go eat potato chips and drink High Life and Fernet and like actually do what the pros do in a way.
And be a normal person.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah, sometimes, especially for those maybe who aren't in our business, they don't know that about us. You know, like everyone thinks that I just drink Amaro all the time.
Well, you do.
Well, true. So that's a bad example. No, but I sit right here on this show every week and I drink a Budweiser. It's delicious. Sometimes we have whiskey with it.
Yeah.
If you see me at a bar that I've never been to and they have a swizzle on the menu, I am compelled to order that. I cannot say no to a swizzle. Yeah. You know, it's like little things that people don't know about me.
Only 4 hamburgers a year?
Only 4 hamburgers a year.
Only 4? Is that like seasonal? Do you space
no,
them out?
No, I just have 4 a year. I could have 4 in a row, I guess, if I've never done that. Last one was in January.
Where was it?
It's not about me, this show. It was at Happiest Hour. I posted on Facebook in the daytime. Everybody that knows me knows I only eat 4 a year, and I just said, I think tonight's a burger night, and it made it special because I had a burger that was pretty fucking delicious, and 12 people showed up to have it with me.
I feel like I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was sad that I was not available to join you.
See, I'm telling you, you know? Where bartenders eat.
Yeah.
I love it.
Damon's onto something there.
Yeah, I'm going to let you do it because that looks like a really big book, and I don't think I have the time or patience to do it. So it looks like you're well versed in this, and you can take that project. I'll help you.
Yeah. It is a lot of, you know, you were saying, oh, we could just update it like every 3 months, but it's an unbelievable amount of work to go through all of the entries.
Right. And like you said, you know, before it's even finished, the ink's not even dry before it's already something's changed, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody's either arrived on the scene or someone's left the scene.
Right.
Or both.
Right.
Like so, you said there were even some bars that literally came and went between when you started and when it was printed, right?
Yes. That's definitely true.
Which is sad. We hate to hear that.
Yeah.
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 So where does Adrian like to drink?
Oh, wow. Turn the tables, Damon.
Yeah. Right?
It's aha journalism.
About the author.
Well, and the other thing that was kind of funny about this book is that, you know, it's not, I'm not a bartender, and therefore my recommendations are not included.
Really? You didn't leave yourself one page in there to be like, here's my faves?
Yeah. No, I didn't. I mean, you know, you can kind of, if you read the introduction.
It's very humble of you.
And the essays, in addition to the listings, there are some short essays included about kind of some of the major regions and areas that talks about a little bit of history and kind of, you know, what to expect when you go to Tokyo and you walk into a Ginza cocktail bar, which is a pretty rarefied experience. You kind of discuss a few pointers and like, how much should you tip?
Yeah.
That type of thing. So those are included in the book as well. And if you read those, you'll kind of get, you know, some of my, more of my
so it's like
input there.
A miniature Lonely Planet for the...
Right.
Yeah.
For drinking culture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Exactly. But so my picks for the bars... So my late night bar is Attaboy, which is right around the corner from where I used to live on Allen and Delancey.
Oh, wow.
And Milk and Honey was the first bar where I had my first real cocktail that kind of, you know, really, like, put me on this trajectory. So that bar holds a very special place in my heart.
Sure.
In addition to the fact that it's just a great bar, like, without any sentimental reasons. Hotel bar. I do really love the Nomad in New York. They have just done... Leo Robichek and his team have done such a phenomenal job at the Nomad. Favorite neighborhood bar. So at this point, because I live in Napa, my favorite neighborhood bar is a little wine bar called Cadet, which is like the only wine bar in Napa, which you might think is kind of weird. Like, why is there not more wine bars in Napa? But there aren't. There's one.
Everyone does tastings at their wineries.
Right. Everyone has a winery instead of a wine bar. But Cadet has a great champagne and they have a cool record collection. And if you go in and you buy a bottle, you get to pick a record and they're open till 2 a.m., which is pretty late for the Napa crowd.
Seriously.
Woof. It's exciting. my local must visit, I would have to do that in New York because Napa's kind of slim pickings. but my local, local must visit in New York.
Wait for it.
I'm waiting.
It's hard. We put you on the spot. I guess it was an aha moment.
Well, I'm trying to think of, you know, because like so many bars you kind of can go in like different
right, even,
categories.
I think even when I answered neighborhood bar, I don't think I answered my own neighborhood. I just thought of a good neighborhood bar that I like.
Right. Which is.
I don't remember what I put, but.
I'm pretty sure you recommend it. Hold on. You recommended McSorley's, but I think that was your local must visit.
Yeah, I mean, I live just a few blocks from there.
Neighborhood Rob Roy.
Oh, Rob Roy, yeah, in Seattle.
Yeah, which is like nowhere, 3,000 miles away from where
nowhere
you
near.
Live.
Rob Roy from a new Elford.
Elford.
She married Chris Elford.
That's right.
She married her best friend.
That's what this show's about.
Circling back.
what's your favorite worth the travel?
Yeah,
worth the travel. Well, so the bar that I really really want to go to.
I mean, now it's probably New York.
Is yeah, right. I haven't been. I really want to go to Tokyo. I really want to go to Bar High Five in Tokyo.
Cool.
And you know, researching this book, I mentioned Ginza earlier, which is a like neighborhood in Tokyo where a lot of these really high-end cocktail bars are, and it was fascinating doing the research on how the cocktail scene evolved in Japan, what the approach there is, because it's pretty different from, at least in, you know, in Ginza and among that community, it's very different from other areas of the world. And they're very there's this incredible focus on the execution and the process behind the bar of mixing the drink, and how it is presented to you is as important as how it tastes when mm-hmm. it hits the table. And it's like a, you know, you don't stand up at the bar, you sit down. It's quiet. Someone described it to me like, you know, it's like going to a Michelin restaurant. You know, it's an incredible experience, but it's very specific. You know, you're not going to have a beer and a shot and unwind at the end of the night. That is, that's what you want to do, do not go
right
to any of these bars. It's not the right choice. This is a place to go when you want to sit at the bar and really, be impressed by the craft
and pampered.
Like, yes,
very pampering.
Yes,
the style.
Yes, absolutely. So that's on my top of my cocktail hit list.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm just gonna throw it at you. I'm sure you haven't heard of it. It literally just opened. I had to reach in my wallet and find the card. But Frank Cisneros is doing that style of cocktail here in New York now, a 10-seat bar, and it's called Bar Uchu.
Uchu.
U C H U. Uchu, with the hard U on the end.
So
you should check it out.
I will.
It just opened. Just
That's
opened.
Awesome. And Frank actually was one of my
contributors. Nice.
To the, I mean, he contributed his recommendations. And he, for those who don't know, lived in Tokyo for a while, for nine months or a year,
a little over a year. Just over a year.
And so he,
and he's traveled back since he's been back a few times. He's very deep into this.
Yeah, and he was a great resource to talk to, not only to get his bar recommendations, but to hear more about the culture over there. And particularly for Westerners who are going to visit Japan, mm-hmm. you kind of need a little more help figuring out what, you know, how you should act in the bar or how to find the bar.
Yeah.
The addresses are impossible, and I make a note
of that.
Well,
in high-rise buildings.
Yes, it's an office building.
Tiny little floor, yeah.
Right. And so, you know, for us from New York, who were used to walking up to the address and seeing a sign for the bar and walking straight in the door, not going into, like, an office building and taking an elevator up to the 15th floor and go, you know, two doors past the hair salon is the bar.
Right.
So he was really invaluable in providing some of that insight. Yeah. About Tokyo.
Frank's a good dude.
Yeah.
The bar opened actually while I was away, so I've only seen it in being built, and then now I came back and it's open. I just heard last night.
Cool.
Anyway, let's do some.
We need to go.
Yeah, we do. Absolutely. I really enjoy Frank's company. I don't think I did forever. did anyone? Frankie Cocktails. But man, he's really coming to his own, and I really enjoy seeing him when I do. Let's do some aha journalism. What would you pick, Damon? Because you weren't in the book.
There we go.
Oh shit. Which category?
I don't know. Throw a couple at him.
Let's start with Wish I'd Opened.
Oh yeah. Maury Margo, of course.
Keen's Trap House.
Oh, come on. although that's awesome.
I mean, come on. That or like Old Town Bar. I love old bars, like
sure.
The old ballroom style. Like, yeah, man. That or Skinny Dennis.
That's a pretty disparate. All right, Old Town Bar or Skinny Dennis would be the wish you opened.
All right, what about your New York local must visit? Don't leave town without going.
I would say McSorley's.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. what I said too.
For
it's
sure.
It's just fucking great. Just a legendary place where when you walk in there, if you're not just a total jackass, you feel really comfortable.
Yeah, like absolutely.
If you're a jackass, they might give you some attitude, but they just want you to be comfortable and drink some beers.
Yeah, man. I'd say even like Angel Share, which has that mm-hmm. very like old school like
sure.
Japanese cocktail bar kind of vibe, but yeah. It's like kind of bustling, you know. And it's been around since 94.
Right.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Doesn't get the credit that it's probably due.
Mm-hmm.
Because those guys don't rattle any cages and like say, yeah. Hey, look at me. They just quietly
just do
their thing.
Yeah. All right. Next one.
What else you got?
A favorite neighborhood bar?
Grand Army.
Cheater.
It used to be, oh God, I can never remember the name of it. We just always call it the Tile Bar.
Oh, and it's the radio station, right? It's
good. No.
Yeah, it's the tile bar.
The library?
No. You talking about on 7th and 1st?
Yeah.
Everyone calls it the tile bar, but there's that clock in the back that's got the radio call sign on it.
Right.
That's the name of the bar.
Oh.
And there's two of them, I found out.
Right.
There's one on the west side.
I didn't realize they were. Okay. Yeah.
But it's also a radio station.
I really like that one.
Yeah, tile bar. Great. $7 for 2 ounces of chartreuse.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Into it.
Yeah. Yeah. Four bucks more gets you a high life.
Yeah. All right, next one.
All right, hotel bar.
The Maxfield's in the Palace Hotel in San Francisco.
Mm.
Oh, that's a giant. That's the, not the in the book.
What's that?
It's not in the book, so tell us.
Oh, yeah. So the Palace Hotel is it's a really old school, beautiful hotel in like downtown San Francisco. And the very first time I ever went there was to guest bartend at Beretta with Ryan Fitzgerald, and they put me up in that hotel, and that was, that bar is the bar in the lobby, and the back bar, instead of having a giant mirror, not dissimilar to Keene's, where there's a giant painting of Miss Keene's,
sure,
behind the bar.
Also there's a big giant mural behind the bar at Angel's Share.
That too, yeah.
Well, I like that style.
So at Maxfield's, it's named after Maxfield Parish, and the painting is gigantic, mm-hmm. and it's the Pied Piper. And then the ceilings are all this like beautiful, kind of like stained glass. There's light coming through. It's just a really cool, again, old hotel bar. Or, not around anymore, the defunct Cold Cord Oyster Bar in Oklahoma City at the Cold Cord building. That place was cool. There's a bunch. I could name off more.
That's your hotel? What's left?
Late Night.
Let's hear this.
The Brooklyn Inn. The Brooklyn Inn in Borum Hill. The place has been around for over 130 years.
I have a painting of the Brooklyn Inn on my wall.
You do?
Yeah.
Cool.
At the Sonny's
benefit event. Oh, is it John Tebow painted it?
John Tebow painted it.
Great.
Great.
It's going to be in this book.
Rad.
Yeah, it's been around for over 130 years. Sometimes they don't even play music in there.
Yes.
It's mostly light jazz. Not like light jazz, but like jazz played lightly in the background. They don't have TVs. I mean, they just have a very standard back bar selection, but it's a great place to go late at night, especially late at night, because it's just full of like neighborhood regulars. And there's a pool table, so you just hear like billiards cracking in the back, and then people hanging out the front. And it's got the mirrors are insane. The mirrors behind the bar are like about 20 feet tall, and they kind of have this kind of vaulted thing that kind of makes the back bar look like a stage, like a theater.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool. And anyway, it's my late night spot.
All right, the last one is Worth the Travel.
The High Low Club in Oklahoma City.
Nicely done.
Or Luckenbach.
Just the town of Luckenbach?
The town of Luckenbach.
Yeah, they have the Feed and Seed Store bar, right?
Yeah, it's a post office.
Feed and Seed Store post office bar. I've been there.
Yeah. Where is this?
Luckenbach, Texas.
it's outside of, kind of, not directly outside of Austin, but it's outside of Fredericksburg, Texas. And it's where all the country greats played.
Let's go to Luckenbach, Texas. Willie and Waylon and the boys. There we go.
Yeah, that's the town. And you just go and drink Lone Stars and play horseshoes in the yard and listen to country music.
Yep,
that's where I want to be.
That's a really brilliant place.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's been great having you on the show, and it's obvious that there's a need for a second edition because you got to include people like Damon.
So obvious, guys. Thank you for having me. This was really fun.
Yeah, awesome.
Thank you.
Is there a link or a website or something you want to talk about to get a copy of the book into people's hands?
You can buy the book on Amazon.
Amazon.
That's the easiest place to get it.
Is that a fulfillment company?
It's a little mom and pop bookstore.
That's right.
It's the one that you can't get wine on.
Actually, you can. You can buy wine on Amazon.
Jesus Christ.
It's widely available at many small independent booksellers, if you would prefer to procure your books that way.
Cool. Yeah, definitely. I'd recommend.
So there's that. There's Wine Direct.
Yep.
.com.
The book.
Where Bartenders Drink.
And yeah, thanks so much for being on the show. It's great.
Guys,
it's
been great. Thanks for having me. My pleasure.
It's kind of like weirdly we got to catch up with you and some other bartenders.
Yep.
Vicariously through the book.
Yeah.
Yeah. next week. We don't know who's going to be on next week, right? Is that, it might be Katie Stipe.
Might be Katie Stipe.
We're waiting to hear back. I would love it if it was Katie Stipe. Then the following week, we've got The Empire of Booze is a book, and the writer's name always escapes me. Henry Jeffries. Henry Jeffries. That's why I escape. I keep wanting to think his name is Jeffrey. And then the next week, you got Darren Grenier from Your Sincerely right out here in Brooklyn. They have a crazy program at that bar. All drinks are on tap, and they're freaking delicious. The following week, Tanya Guffey.
Whoa.
The Guppy. And past that, I've got Kyle and Rachel Ford, and, you know, more junk even beyond that. So please tune in and listen to the Speakeasy every week. This was a great show. I really appreciate you being in the studio.
Yeah. Thanks, Adrian.
What do you got? Thanks, guys.
That sounds good to me. I'm out of town this weekend at a wedding in Ojai, California. Might see some people out in San Francisco.
Right on. Playing a show too, right?
Playing a show in Ojai on Saturday night.
Nice.
The Ojai Rancho Inn. Yeah.
Ojai cool. Rancho Inn.
Yeah, man.
It's gonna Brothers. Be
and then we'll be back and rocking and rolling as always.
Yeah, man.
All right, cool. Well, until next week, I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
And this is the Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. Check out the website for many more programs like this one. Till then, cheers.
Cheers, guys.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you some.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.